This week on the Commander Clash podcast, we're talking about cards that you might be forgetting to put in your decks. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we are talking about cards that you might be forgetting to put in your deck. So these are kind of sleeper cards, but kind of sleepers for a specific deck or a specific archetype. So if you're building around the theme, these are cards that maybe you forget to put in that you really should consider putting in. And joining me today, we got the small crew. Unfortunately, Krim just lost his internet a few minutes ago. So it's Tomer and Phil today. What's up, guys? How you doing today?
Well,
yo. I like talking about cards.
Yeah, cardboard, my favorite thing to talk about. Anyway, before we get to cards you might be forgetting about, we got a couple of sponsors today. Today's show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGOldfish to get 15% off. Today's show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. Normally, you can use our code MTGOldfish. You'll get 10% off of your order, but on any new shipment created between February 1st and February 14th, the discount is doubled up to 20%. So if you want to sell some cards and get a fast payment without all the work, head over to cardconduit.com/MTGOldfish. And use the code MTGGoldfish at checkout to get 20% off. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So last week, we did the long-awaited Phyrexian Arena tier list, and our top comment comes from a familiar face. As some Minecraft player 8557 says, no longer waiting on the Phyrexian Arena tier list.
Amazing.
Oh, so many likes as well on this comment.
The saga has finally finished. There's a happy ending.
If you don't know the story of this, some Minecraft player posted waiting on a Phyrexian Arena tier list for like 3 months, and it just kept getting more and more upvotes until eventually we were like, you know what? We're actually going to do it. So the saga has come to an end, and now it's time to talk about cards you might be forgetting to put in your deck. So Phil, yeah, this was kind of your idea. So let's start with you. Why don't you give us an example of a card that people might be forgetting to put in their decks?
Yeah, so an example, or like the explanation of the premise, is cards that you might not at first thought think synergize with your deck or think about when deck building. One example that we used in have referenced in other podcasts is Retraced Image in Mono Blue deck. It's a 1 blue spell that reveal a card in your hand, then put that card onto the battlefield if it has the same name as a permanent you control. So mono blue decks usually play a lot of islands, draw a lot of cards, so there's a pretty high chance that for 1 blue mana you can put an island into the battlefield. Regardless if it works with your commander or anything, this just synergizes with your deck on a different level than your commander. Another example would be like clones that copy your commander, and that would probably be my first point here, is if your commander, if you usually build around your commander, and some of them, not all of them, kind of weirdly enough, work very well if you have multiple of them. For example, that's why I kind of forgot to put one of these in Lonis, because Lonis will just straight up double up. And since I really build around these clues, I should probably just play one of those, form and copy something, it's non-legendary, and then I create 2 clues with every creature. It will trigger off itself already, or like the other Lonis. And then I should probably play it in Omnath as well, because same thing, it also draws a card when it enters, and then I get double the triggers. So if you really need your commander, or probably if your commander curves into them as well, they usually cost 4 mana. So if you can curve into them, it might be a good idea to just put a Sakashima. There's a new one from Spider-Man. Like, there's a bunch of stuff that copies your commander that works obviously very well with your commander, regardless of how the rest of the deck works with it.
I think, especially if it's something that's like not just restricted to your commander, clones that can copy anything on the battlefield, like your opponent's stuff too, and do that, I think those are probably the best ones because
then the flaw is even lower.
Always get value out of them, right?
Mm-hmm. Are there any that copy anything and also get around the legend rule?
So I think there's some spells that do, right? Like, does Iron Kliss's Vile Duplication?
No, that's
Realm Sketching.
What's Realm Sketching? No, but that's not legend. Like,
that one's not. That one's
not. Let me check the one.
Okay, maybe they all copy.
Do they all? Are they all restricted to that? Oh,
Okay, so I play one in Manus Kalga. And it creates a token copy, which this one also are just synergizing with my commander, so it's fine. It is create a token that's a copy of target creature you control, except it's not legendary. It's already it's also like $30 now in this version, which I bought it for $2. Quantum Misalignment. Ooh, what the hell?
I found one.
Oh, what is it?
I found one. It's actually also the oldest one that I can think of too. Sakashima the Imposter.
Hey,
Sakashima,
the classic. Nice.
The classic from original Kamigawa. It enters the battlefield as a copy of any creature on the battlefield, but it retains its name. So it's still Sakashima the Imposter. So if you copy your commander, it's still going to be called Sakashima, so you don't have to worry about the legend rule. If you have another Sakashima the Imposter, then it's gonna be, then it's gonna die. But that is one way. It even can return itself to hand too, so you can copy something else at a later date. But I don't think I've ever done that in 15 plus years of casting it. So
I can get behind that one. I mean, I personally can't get behind that one because I don't ever play my commander to begin with. So what good is trying to clone it? But if I was a normal
Auton
person.
Soldier. And Auton Soldier, apparently. Apparently there's like one or two.
Okay, there's a couple. Yeah, I think that's something to keep in mind. And honestly, that's not something I've considered a lot, Phil. But that makes a lot of sense to me. If you're playing a commander but you really want to have multiples of, why not clone it and get twice the value? And it's even like a little bit of targeted removal protection, right? If they want to get rid of your commander, they're going to need to kill two things instead of just one thing. So I actually kind of like that plan. That's a good one.
I like that one too. I run some clones in Furcrag because Furcrag's my commander's ability is so powerful. But also I run a bunch of dragons that aren't on super high on the mana value. And there's not a lot of them that I actually want to be running in the deck. And so the clones like Sakashima the Imposter, actually, they're very good when they copy the commander. But then if I copy basically any other dragon I have, which is a very small amount, it's just really good to copy basically any of them. And then sometimes you can just copy your opponent's creature. They're very flexible.
Yeah.
Very flexible.
No, good pick. Good pick. Well, let's move on to... Wait, was that an example, Phil? Or was that your first choice?
No, that was already
my choice. Okay.
Thing, because we talked so long about it.
Okay, let's go on to Tomer. Tomer, what's a card people might be forgetting to put in their decks?
Okay, this is one that I've been high on for a very, very long time. And it kind of falls under the radar a lot because, like we said, like these are the type of cards that don't really show up like on EDH Rec or something when you're building the deck, but they can synergize with a lot of different decks. So my first pick is Hidden Strings. It's a 2-mana blue sorcery that says you may tap or untap target permanent. Then you may tap or untap another target permanent. It has a Cypher mechanic. Cypher mechanic says you may exile this spell card encoded on a creature you control. Whenever that creature deals combat damage to a player, its controller may cast a copy of the encoded card without paying its mana cost. So the way this works, Hidden Strings, you cast it, you get to tap or untap 2 permanents, and then you get to encode it on a creature you control. And then when that creature deals combat damage to an opponent, you get to cast a copy of the encoded spell again. I really like this card on basically any evasive style deck, which ends up being a lot of different decks that I like. I originally ran it in Taurand Sky Summoner way back in the day, because Taurand is a commander that whenever he casts an instant sorcery, you make a 2/2 Drake with flying. So he's always making a bunch of 2/2s on the battlefield that he can encode Hidden Strings on. When you cast Hidden Strings, you trigger Taurand, you make another Drake. And usually, I'm always using this ability to just untap two lands, essentially. You cast Hidden String for two mana, you untap two lands, so you're now mana neutral. You encode it on a creature that has evasion, you smack somebody, and then you can untap two more lands. And that's how it works with Talrent. It's even better with Talrent because when you're casting the Cyphered spell, it triggers Talrent again and triggers all your like instant sorceries matter cards, so you make another Drake. But I also, when I was building a bunch of new budget brews, I put it in my Furcrag deck because it's a bunch of flying creatures. Furcrag flies, all my dragons fly, and I'm in Izzet, so I don't have access to green. So this is another way of just generating more mana every single turn. I also ran it in Sokka, Tenacious Tactician, which, you know, makes a bunch of menacing creatures whenever you're casting non-creature spells. This is a way of getting more triggers out of that and also ramping. Indomitable, aka Boat Edric. It's just a bunch of evasive beaters. So you get to untap and ramp that way too. And Gogoro, Goro, and Satoru. It's a ninja deck. Is the 99 is full of ninjas and they're all evasive. So this is another cute way of ramping that way. But I guess you could do other things with it. You could untap other stuff too. If you have like a big mana rock or something, you can untap that. But like, I'm just untap lands and I'm very happy. Bounce lands or whatever.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's what I would think too, is like lands that tap for a lot of mana. The other place I thought of playing the card outside of like direct evasive decks would be like, it seems so good with Devotion or if you have Cabal Coffers, any of those lands that tap for a ton of mana. So like Thassa, God of the Sea, you have like a Devotion commander that also can just pay two and make a creature unblockable until end of turn. So something like that, you could probably make like an insane amount of mana in a Thassa deck once you start popping off with Hidden Strings. So.
I mean, bounce lands alone. I always forget about cypher cards in general. I kind of wish they would do it again and give them a little bit more power.
They kind of suck for the most part. I mean, because you're like, there's so much risk, right? Because you're like, you get the spell effect, but then there's a lot of risk, kind of like an aura, where if the creature dies, you lose all the extra value you'd get out of it. So I feel like you could maybe juice them a little bit more because of the risk you get out of them when a lot of them fell a little under, like overcosted the first time. But yeah, I mean, still a cool idea.
Yeah, they got to make it like, lessons where they just power creep the new ones so they're good on their own. And now the cypher is just extra gravy. If it's a good spell that also has cypher.
I will say that Tomer's pick, though, Hidden Strings is kind of like on raid on its own, though. Cool, so I think that's the one that's like closest to being on raid.
You wouldn't get
this
for one mana. Yeah.
If you cast it, put it on an evasive creature and immediately swing, imagine that's essentially a Dark Ritual. Like, you pay two mana and you get back four mana if you're just untapping regular lands. So then it's kind of good. And then, yeah, the creature will die eventually, but I don't think you need that many. You need like one or two turns, and then I think it's already done enough for you.
And it's kind of a free spell, right? Like if you play this, untap two lands, you get your mana back that you spent on it, and then you untap future lands and make extra mana. I might have to try this. This might actually Tomer. You might
you
be
get
right.
it the same turn. You cast it, you get the effect, and then you immediately swing. If you have evasive creatures, if you immediately swing, you get the effect immediately again. So that's you're netting four mana for the cost of two and hitting somebody. But like, yeah, you need to have evasive creatures. Number one, or else it's not good.
All right, let's move on to my first pick, and I'm going with a new mechanic here. This is a mechanic that I've played quite a bit since it released in Avatar, and I feel like people are just not putting these cards in as many decks as they should, and that's Waterbending, specifically Spirit Water Revival and Waterbender's Restoration. So Spirit Water Revival is a 3 mana for divination at sorcery speed. 3 mana, you draw 2 cards, but if you can waterbend 6, instead you get to shuffle your graveyard into your library, and then you draw 7 cards, and you have no max hand size for the rest of the game. So becomes incredibly supercharged if you waterbend it. Waterbender's Restoration, 2 mana for an instant. You can waterbend X to help pay for its cost, and you exile X creatures, return to the battlefield under their owner's control, beginning in the next end step. So these are cards I was looking on EDH Rec, because I love these cards. I play them in a lot of decks, but no one else really plays them. If you look on EDH Rec, they only play them in Avatar-themed decks for the most part, is just like, oh, it fits the flavor, so I'll play it with Avatar Aang or Katara or whatever. These are cards that are absurd in token decks. They're probably at their best in artifact token decks, because artifact tokens are harder to kill. But if you are any deck that's making a bunch of tokens, I don't care if it's a trinkety artifact tokens or creature tokens, I think these cards are staples. Like Spirit Waters Revival, the amount of card draw you can get for just 3 mana by just tapping a bunch of random things you have on the battlefield is huge. And then Waterbender Restoration, I think, is actually on my short list of like best wrath protection spells in blue, since you can just pay 2 mana and then tap a bunch of stuff to blink out your stuff. And you can even use it to just save your team from target removal. You can reuse your ETB triggers in a Panermonicon style deck. So I think these are cards that if you're building tokens, and I know, Phil, you have like a Lannis deck, it's great there, but any sort of token deck, I think you should at least consider playing these cards is some of your utility spells. But where are you guys at waterbending with tokens? Are these cards not as good as I think?
I think they're better than I thought, because I did end up at least ordering Spirit Water Revival.
Hey,
I didn't
there
make
we go.
Cuts yet, but I play tested it in Brawl, and it is just absurd in lowness. Even though, so at first I think everybody read this card wrong and thought they had to shuffle everything back.
Mm-hmm.
You just draw seven extra cards and shuffle your graveyard back, so absurd for 3 mana if you can do it. And it turns out 6 clues are pretty easy to do in lowness, especially if you have like 3 mana. Like, you usually don't cast it on turn 3, but like, oh my god, no maximum hand size as well. I'm so, so happy that if I find room for it, which I will somehow. Hopefully it's not going to be a land. We'll see what I cut. But man, this card, I think it plays way better than I thought. Although Lannis might be one of the best decks for it.
Lannis. Yeah. Lannis is really good, but like Adrix and Nev is good. I think the biggest challenge is you need to be in blue, and there's not as many blue blaze token decks. By playing like Adrix or Nev or Essex or Burdaclad, like anything like that, I think it's great too. But Tomer, what do you think about these ones?
I'm iffy on the card draw. Like, I feel like it's a little bit... 3 mana for a Divination is not very good.
True.
And then the waterbending is... It's like, it feels like there's so much... There's no in-between, right? Like, it's either it's a bad card or you're already in a very good position and then you get to draw a whole bunch for pretty decent rates. So, I don't know. I feel like it's a little bit too inflexible for me.
It's a lot of mana. Lannis deck as well. Doesn't he also just get Raft and then ends up with like 10 clues?
In Lannis like is great.
4 mana.
I would absolutely run it in Lannis, but I'm just thinking about a lot of other token strategies that I'm running, and it's like Lannis is like kind of a special case where it's just like there's not that many blue commanders that are just like, I'm just going to passively make a bajillion tokens for free.
I guess any deck that makes a place Academy Manufacturer but also plays blue, which I admit aren't too many. Yeah.
Here's the test. Here's the test. Phil, I know you got Marinus Kelgar. Would you play either of these in there? Because that's
I draw
a
enough
blue
cards
deck that
in
makes
this one.
Okay, you draw enough cards that you don't need
really
it. Okay.
Not the
and
problem.
If you're like a creature token deck, you just throw down like a Coastal Piracy, and then it's a little bit more... Like, I guess you have to be... If you're an attacky-based deck, I'm usually an attacky-based deck. I do say Waterbender Restoration, though, is pretty easy for me to be playing, and I have played quite a bit. I think like I will run March of Swirling Mist more often than this, just because it can phase it does a similar thing where it's protecting your board state, but March of Swirling Mist can also phase out your opponent's creatures. So if you're being swung at or you have to disrupt their board, it's a little bit more flexible. But I do really like this one because typically when I'm casting Waterbender Restoration, if I have like if I'm attacking with one creature and then I have like two back or something like that, and then I just need to have like 3 mana up and I can save my entire board of creatures, and it's really easy, and you can use like the treasures, you can like have treasures laying around and you don't have to crack them and use those instead. So I found more homes for the restoration just because I feel it's a little bit more flexible. Like I don't need to have like either I don't need to cast it for like little mana or maximum mana. I like the restoration more just because of the flexibility, and it's a very powerful effect.
The one thing I would say about Waterbender Restoration versus March of Swirling Mist, I think I agree in like a vacuum that March is stronger. I like Waterbender's Restoration more in decks that aren't playing as many blue cards. So like a three-color deck where I'm not going to have as many cards to pitch to Marchis where I only miss that are blue. Then I really like Waterbender Restoration. If I'm in mono blue and I'm just going to have a ton of blue cards, though, then I think March is like really good because you can exile cards to help pay for the cost. But
it also reuses Blink. So if you're like an ETB deck, then it's much better than March because you'll just get a whole bunch of ETB triggers.
Yep. No, that is a big upside compared to phasing out, too. But anyway, let's go back to the top of the order. Phil, what's another card you keep forgetting? People keep forgetting to put in their decks.
All right. So this one might be suffering from colors as well because it's two colors. But I checked EDHREC and I am checking again. It seems like not too many, if it's actually not on the creature list for. Okay, so for black and green token decks or go white decks, I have found that if you untap with a Fiend Artisan, you are in a very good position. So, for example, like the Myco Tyrant. So, let's read Fiend Artisan real quick because you see it not as often as you would expect. It's a 2-drop, 2-hybrid Golgari mana. It gets +1/+1 for each creature in your graveyard, and it's a 1/1. By itself, and then for X and one hybrid Golgari, tap it, sacrifice another creature, search your library for a creature card with converted mana value X or less, put it onto the battlefield, and then shuffle only as a sorcery. So you sacrifice a creature and tutor for X. Doesn't matter how much mana value the two creature has, so it's not a pot or something. So you can just, for example, Myco Tyrant doesn't seem to play it, although it descends and it creates tokens, and then the tokens you'll just pay, I don't know, pay 1 and X and get a Stitcher Supplier, or pay 3 and X and get an Eternal Witness and get back the thing you sacrificed, or anything. Like, it seems so flexible, and maybe it's too boring because it's a tutor, but man, whenever I untap with it in Commander, and it's, for example, I play it in Necrobloom, because it just gets all the Blot Artists and then it stacks up very well, or like Mirkwood Bats and stuff. Whenever you untap with it, it feels good and it feels a little broken.
Interesting. I feel like this card almost like does too much and people get overwhelmed by it and don't play it, because it's also got like the, it gets big based on how many creatures in your graveyard, so you can play
it
in like
very
a graveyard deck to try to make this like, because I see on EDHREC it's a lot of like Madrotha style play, like people if they do play it, they play it in like these graveyard decks. I think it's a really interesting idea though to play in a go wide deck. I would think it would mostly depend on what I want to tutor up. My big concern would be you got to pay a mana and X to be able to tutor something up. So if you're trying to get like a Craterhoof Behemoth or a 5-drop, you got to have a lot of mana. If your plan is I'm going wide
one
and I'm just going
mana.
Like Blood Artist and Blood Artist and Blood Artist and Blood Artist, or like my deck has a bunch of cheap things to tutor up, then I think it's good. I guess in the case, Craterhoof's probably a bad example, because if you're getting Craterhoof, you're just going to win the game. But getting like value-y plays that cost 5, 6, 7 mana are going to take like your turn, I guess, but you are getting your best creature at a 1-man attack, so I don't know. I'm intrigued, especially if I have cheap creatures that I want to tutor.
Yeah, I use it for sub mana value 3 creatures, for example. First of all, if this is the only card that I ordered when they said, wait, should we switch the hybrid rule?
Oh.
Because if I could play this in mono black Jadar and sacrifice my decayed zombie every turn,
like
for
so
2 mana, I just get a Gravecrawler or something. It is just over in 2 turns, just with Gravecrawler and, I don't know, Warren Soul Trader or something. You can tutor every turn onto the battlefield.
Another reason not to do it.
Yeah, that might be the problem. Although it's not like people don't play tutors, like demonic tutors and stuff like that, and some of the most played cards. So maybe people just forget about it.
Change the hybrid rule, put it on the game changer list, I say.
Yeah, to me, it's interesting. It feels like a lot of times I'd prefer Birthing Pod, just because you have to pay the X, and also Birthing Pod, you can activate immediately unless you can give Fiend Artisan haste. But on the other side, Fiend Artisan costs less mana to cast. It's just 2 instead of the 3 in Phyrexian, and it's a big creature. And it's also a sac outlet. So I guess, yeah, if you're focused on like 1, 2, and 3 mana creatures, it's good. And if you have like tokens and stuff, if you sacrifice those, because Birthing Pod really wants, you want to sacrifice something that has mana value to it to get your bigger things. Whereas this one has more flexibility. And if you go like super ramp as well, then it rewards you for ramping by letting you just ramp out big creatures with a little 1/1 token or whatever. So it is an interesting card that I don't see that much.
Yeah, that is an interesting one. I would also say, like, if you only need to get one thing, maybe a Green Sun Zenith effect is better. So also the repeatability of wanting to tutor up, like, multiple things over multiple turns is where this would shine even more, yeah. Let's go back to Tomer. What do you got, Tomer?
I got a pretty simple one. I don't know why it doesn't seem play. And it's even printed in some, like, at least one precon. It's Drowneyard Temple. Drowneyard Temple is just a colorless land. It enters untapped. It taps for 1 colorless mana, but you can pay 3 mana, return this card from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. So as long as this is in your graveyard, for 3 mana, instant speed, it's like a colorless Rampant Growth for 3 mana, instant speed. And I think that's pretty neat. I end up running a lot of red decks. You know me, I've been running a lot of red decks in the last year or so on Commander Clash. And Red Ducks, you know what they like doing? They like doing looting. Mm-hmm. They like looting a whole bunch. And nothing feels better to me. Nothing puts a smile on my face more, other than maybe Price of Progress, but that'll be later, than just like faithless looting, a Drowneyard Temple away, and then instant speed. I'm holding up my fork. I'm holding up my Repaying Kinds. I'm holding up my whatever. And then I don't need to use that stuff. Guess what? I'm going to pay 3 mana. I'm going to Rampant Growth in red, baby. That's pretty good. And then I think it sees more play. It sees more play in, like, the South Mill decks, like Teval and whatnot. Not as much as I think it should. It shows up in the precons because that's where the precons put them. But, like, I think if you're any sort of, like, South Mill deck, discard deck, it's pretty good. It's colorless, so, like, if you're 5-color, I would say do not do this. But if you're, like, 2-color, 1-color, 3-color even, I think you could just put this as a colorless land. And then every once in a while, you're ramping it out for 3 mana. Feels really good. It kind of, it's like not Talon Gates of Madara, but it's better than Talon Gates in a way if you're discarding it and then just ramping it out, because then it's card advantage and mana advantage. So that's for me.
I literally forget to put this card in my deck because over the last year, I've really become a huge believer in like big score, unexpected windfall, Fable the Mirror Breaker. If I play mono red, those are like my core cards that I always play. Those are my ramp. Those are my card filtering. And this is a card that I've played, like you see on EDH Rec, in like the graveyard decks where I'm like, oh, I'm a Sidisi deck. I'm going to mill a bunch. I guess I can mill this over and get it back, but I hadn't really thought through, oh, I can discard this to my big scores and then get it back and turn it into Rampant Red. I feel like this is going to be a mono red staple for me now that I'm thinking about it. Why would I not play this? Like, it's a free discard, so I'm even generating more card advantage, and then I can ramp into play later. Like, it's absolutely perfect for that play style. So, yeah, I hadn't thought about it, but I think I'm going to play this in a lot of my red decks now.
Yeah, if you pull this off, it's like feel goods at any point. Like, you don't feel bad at all discarding this, and then it feels so clever to get this out of the yard, which I have so far, I think, never done, because I just straight up always forget about this. It is similar to the Spider-Man land, the Urban Retreat, I think, the one that you can web sling.
That's fun.
Mm-hmm. Also costs 3, and when you pull it off, it's like, ooh.
I think it's only cool 2. Play. I think it's only 2, but you have to return a creature. So there's like the it's only downside. It's only 2, right? Urban Retreat?
Urban Retreat is 2, but you have to return a tapped creature to your hand as well. Yeah. It's also similar to I don't know the name of it, but the Grixis one from the Spider-Man set, which has Madness, Oscorp, right? If you discard it, Oscorp Industries. Because that also has the discard. I think it's Oscorp Industries, yeah. But it has kind of the similar synergy, right? Where if you can discard it, then you put it into play. I think the challenge with both of these, I think they're good. They're just 3 colors. So I can't play like
and
Oscorp Industries in my mono red deck.
And I
block Spider-Man out of my mind.
I think Drowneyard is actually better because it enters untapped. And Oscorp Industries, you can only play it, like, you have to play it as your lane drop. So with Drowneyard Temple, you could play your land, and then you could, like, either, like, you can loot or whatever, and then you can rape that out, and it doesn't count as your lane drop or anything, and you could do it at instant speed and whatnot.
That's a good point. So Oscorp Industries, it's not actually ramp. It's just free discard. But but yeah, Drown Your Temple is actually ramp. Yeah, it's a good. Yeah, this one actually is going to improve my decks, Tomer. So good. Good pick, because I'm going to play it in all my red decks now. All right. Next up on my list, we have a card that I think people forget to put in decks for a different reason. So one of the reasons I forget to put cards in decks is when I'm building a deck, I have certain things that I search for on like Magic Online or Scryfall to try to build the deck. So for example, we just got Lorwyn Eclipse. There's all these tribal synergies. So I've been searching for cards for tribal decks. And one of the things I look for a lot is choose a creature type, right? Choose a creature type's a big one that you play in any tribal deck. But there's a card that... Also, I guess I blocked Dr. Who out of my mind, but there's a card that I had never seen until I was researching these tribal decks. I just stumbled across this. It doesn't show up in any of the searches because it's worded kind of weirdly. But the more I read this card, the more I'm like, I think this card might actually be like super good in tribal decks. And that card is Everything Comes to Dust. So Everything Comes to Dust is 10 mana. I know, a big number. 3 white and 7. It has Convoke, though, so you can tap your creatures to help pay the cost. And then it says, exile all creatures except those that share a creature type with a creature that Convoke this spell. Exile all artifacts, exile all enchantments. So essentially you get almost a farewell-style wrath. Wait, you're exiling everything. You're getting rid of everything except graveyards, I guess, compared to farewell. You get rid of all the creatures, artifacts, and enchantments. And if you're playing a tribal deck, all you need to do is tap one of your things that share a creature type with it, and hopefully you tap a few more to get its cost down, but you're not actually going to lose your board. So this is going to be a one-sided farewell in some sense. So I feel like this card, I was thinking about Winnowing, which was the new like kind of Convoke wrath they printed in Lorwyn Eclipse. The more I read Everything Comes to Dust, the more I'm starting to think this might actually just be better than Winnowing in the same decks that would want it. But I'm curious. I haven't played this card yet. This is a card that's on my list to play. What do you think? Have I been missing anything? Is this a card that you should play in more of your like creature type matters decks?
I'm afraid if you start casting this. I love this card so much. I'm very afraid if people start picking it up, though, because it's very, very good.
You just need to play changelings.
Yeah. No, I can't play changelings because then it doesn't blow anything up.
You play changelings, so it doesn't matter for
To play against
it. It does matter if you play artifacts, though, so I am scared.
But yes, like it's also exile. It's so strong. If you're a creature focused deck, typically you're gonna usually most of those like creature matters decks, they're only running like 10 or so enchantments plus artifacts because you're doing a bunch of creature stuff. You're probably having like 30 plus creatures in your deck. So I think as long as you're not human, I think this is going to be a banger. If you're human, just human's the most popular creature type in Magic, so it might just whiff more often than it's worth. But like outside of going human, like if you're a white based dragon deck or any sort of deck, you know, you just have like 4 or so creatures on the battlefield. It's now a 6 mana. Everybody cries. Yeah, wrath, like it really it's is. Like, and it gets around indestructible. This card is just so legit. It's so legit. It's so scary though, because this is yet another thing that when I'm playing my silly artifact deck, I'm just like, oh man,
you're done.
Oh, well, I'm cooked. I'm cooked, chat. I'm cooked.
Have you tried this one, Phil?
No, I remember thinking it was cool in spoiler season, but then. I don't know, it's a Doctor Who spoiler season. too much.
Yeah.
I have such a blank spot for that entire set, like the Doctor Who cards. But yeah, I'm going to play this in a bunch of my tribal decks going forward, and we're gonna see what happens. But I got a feeling this one's going to be pretty good if you're going wide with the same creature type.
I'm already terrified.
Yeah. all right, let's go back to Phil. Phil, what do you got that people forget to put in their decks?
Okay, so this card didn't have too much time to be forgotten yet, but at least I tried to build around a lot with this, and okay, so it is Aurora Awakener. It is 7 mana, 7/7 trample from Lorwyn Eclipse. It has Vivid, and this creature enters reveal cards from the top of your library until you reveal X permanent cards, where X is the number of colors among permanents you control. Put any number of those permanents onto the battlefield, then put the rest of the revealed cards onto the bottom in a random order. So it enters, and as many colors, at least one, because it's green, of permanents come from the top of your library onto the battlefield. And so it first started with me trying to break it somehow, where you don't have any permanents in the deck except this and clones and stuff. And maybe we can do this at some point with MDFCs.
It's a Brewer's Kitchen video. I feel like
You have to kind of play against decks that do... You kind of play against Oops All Spells, which is way
just
better.
just make an alt account. Just play against the bronze. It's fine.
Wait, were you doing this? You were doing this in like Timeless or something too, right? Like powerful format.
You gotta do it super early, so it's cool. But then you fight through Oops All Spells and stuff that do similar things way better. The problem is, and I tried it in like some three color decks. I think three colors where this starts to get interesting. And I always revealed just lands. And then I noticed that if you get this worst case, like the flaw of getting three lands, just make this good. Just play Landfall. So now I play it in Necrobloom and Omnath, and all of a sudden it slaps because Omnath is four colors. Then you get four landfall triggers at least. I mean, best case, you get any other permanents, which usually either get lands or are like very good in these kinds of decks. And the lands also enter untapped. So if you manage to slap a Springheart Nantuku on this, you do the thing. And you tap them, copy it a bunch of times. Yeah, it is one of those cards that
don't you just put all the permanents onto the battlefield if you spring card, basically? Like, well, you
statistically
still have to keep hitting lands.
Yeah, you get a bunch of lands, but yeah, yes.
If you have like five, if you have five color Vivid on and you put a spring card, I think that's
in five
GG.
Color. Yeah, I think the thing is with Vivid, you get kind of tempted to say, oh, it's only good in five color decks.
Mm-hmm.
But I think three is very fine with this. Like if you say a what's the ramp spell? Open the way.
Open the way, yeah.
It does nothing but ramp the first lands from the top of your library, but this one comes with a 7/7 blinkable trample body. And it can also like we are talking about this the floor here. Like if the
7/7
floor is trampler great,
too.
And then man, the ceiling is obviously crazy. Like if you hit, you can hit whatever.
I feel like playing it in landfall decks is a good way to raise the floor. I think that's a really interesting technique to go about it because I've seen there was this deck, I think it was MTG Creative Combos or someone posted where it was like a seven land deck built around this for standard where you would try to just like tutor up of your lands and then
like
you would be guaranteed that you would only hit permanents and you chain through your whole deck. So I've seen people go that direction. I've seen people try to go five colors to just maximize the number of cards you hit. But just being like, hey, I actually want lands on the battlefield because it's going to trigger stuff, that's a good way to raise the floor on this. I think if you're three colors, I'm gonna add it to my Yarok deck, I think, because you just get to double the trigger and you have a three color commander. But I think if you have a three color commander like the Necrobloom, like Yarok, four color like Omnath, this card seems really good, especially if you actually want the lands in play.
I mean, yeah, like I still like Genesis Wave in 2026. I know memes, but like there's a set, if your Genesis Wave is a triple green and X, I think, right? If you're doing, so Aurora Awakener is essentially, if you're comparing it to Genesis Wave, X equals 4. If you're in a three color deck and you do X equals 3, you're guaranteed to always hit whatever, you're guaranteed to get three hits. Whereas Genesis Wave will whiff if you have like any instants or sorceries or something like that, non-permanents. And also you can whiff if it's like something bigger than X equals 4. And this one will never whiff. And then this one has an ETB. And this one can work with Spring Card and a Tuco. So I think it compares favorably to Genesis Wave just in three color. And you just have to be a rampy deck, right? And that's what green does. It seems very good. And it's a 7/7 trampler. It's big. It hits hard.
Yeah, and trample's huge. If you're going to have a big thing, you really want to have trample. So
then you cast Rishkar's Expertise or something, and then you draw seven, and you put another thing onto the battlefield.
Or you can just get this into the new Avatar thing that's like a permanent that draws cards, like Avatar, the green saga that flips into an Avatar. The first chapter is
Rishkar's
Expertise.
Yeah,
so if you go into this,
I have it right here.
Nice.
I've been putting that card in a lot of decks. That's part
Card's
of the
good.
Green card draw package for me now.
That's good.
Tomer, let's get back to you. What's another card that you'd have people forget to put in their decks?
Okay, this one. This is a good one. Okay, it's 1.23 inclusion, so it's a little bit more popular than my last one, but I will always forget this one personally. And I remember it's usually Niotic that reminds me to put this in the deck. It's Scholar of New Horizons. Mm-hmm. It's a 2-mana white, 1/1 creature human scout. It enters the battlefield with 1/+1 counter on it, so it's a 2/2. You can tap it, remove a counter from a permanent you control, search your library for a planes card, and reveal it. If an opponent controls more lands than you, you may put that card onto the battlefield tapped. If you don't put the card onto the battlefield, put it into your hand, then shuffle. This card, I think, is an auto-include in any counters deck. If you're in whites and you deal with +1/+1 counters, -1/-1 counters, loyalty counters, whatever Saga lore counters is, I think. So I think it's lore counters for Saga. Whatever counters. If there are counters in your deck, you run this card. I don't care what type of counters it is. Because for 2 mana, it's not even that you pay mana to activate this ability. You just tap it, and every single turn, you're going to, worst case scenario, put a planes into your hand. And it could be a duel. It doesn't have to be a basic planes. Mm-hmm. You can get your Godless Shrine or whatever, your Shock Lands or whatever, your Surveil Lands off this, and it comes with +1/+1 counter by itself too. So even if you have no counters on the battlefield when you play this, worst case, you remove a counter from itself. Obviously, it's like absolutely crazy good in sagas. I think we've seen it recently with Phil. He had a saga on the battlefield and he just popped off super hard. He outramped all the green players with this nonsense. And it was glorious.
Hold on a second. Somebody's at the door.
Yeah. I think I think that was me actually that did that with Restoration of a Ganjo. Because there was a game with Restoration of a Ganjo, and it just ended with 20 Seth, lands on the battlefield.
That was insane.
I think this card's actually even better than, like, yes, if you're playing sagas, things with counters, it's great. I've actually went so far as to just, like, I play this, like, Loyal Warhound now, or what, just, like, any white catch-up ramp spell. Like, if I'm just white, I just play this every time as one of my catch-up ramp spells. Even though I can only use it once, that's the same with Loyal Warhound or the other catch-up ramp spells, right? Like, the risk is it dies before you get to activate it, but, like, who's gonna... really realistically, who's gonna spend a removal spell on a Scholar of New Horizons on turn two and like kill it like before you get to tap it once? So I think it can pop off in those decks, but I think you can play it in just like any white deck.
It's funny because in some ways it works better because you usually can't play Loyal Warhound on turn three. You have to play it turn, or you can't play it turn two, you have to play turn three. Because even if you're going like second or whatever, and somebody goes like turn two land, you can't go turn two land Warhound, right? Because then you're going to be equal. Yeah, you're the person in front of you. On if you want to play a turn two a Loyal Warhound, the person in front of you has to go like turn two Rampant Growth or something like that. And that's not very common. It doesn't happen too often. Whereas Scholar of New Horizons, you can actually just always play a turn two, then wait until somebody plays their third land and then activate it. So it's not even that, like, timing wise, it works out the same as Loyal Warhound. And you put it in your hand, worst case. Like,
right, yeah, where that's the thing. It's like a bad Weathered Wayfinder that you can always activate. Yeah. So even if you are ahead on lands, you still are essentially tapping to draw a card. Especially if you can get like Surveil lands out of it and get some more value, then it's even better. But what do you think of this one, Phil? Are you a scholar believer?
I mean, it is. Yes, I am. And it is part of the homogenization of my mono white decks, especially, which some people have noticed. It's like part of the package is Restoration of Iganjo. So you... It curves like crazy, and it's probably the best thing with it. Urza Saga as well. And a new addition that is also in all of my mono-white decks is the Station Land, the Adagio. Because these are just trivially easy to get counters on. Like the mono-white one or all of them. And then you just have counters to remove for this one forever. Just tap a creature, put a station counter on the Adagio, and then... this is every turn. I wouldn't have thought about it in a way of a thing we forget, because it is totally on my radar. But whenever I play it anywhere in the wild, I have to explain it because it is also a very complicated text box. So good point. People should probably think about putting this in probably all their at least mono white decks. It's just one of the best catch up ramps.
It is. It's really good. All right, let's move on. I got a deep cut that I'm excited about. I'm curious. I'm curious if anyone even plays with this card, but it seems so good to me in the right deck. So we're going all the way back to Ice Age to Ice Age for Mudslide. So Mudslide, it is a, did you say you don't know it or you love
it? I don't know this. I don't know this card.
Okay, so this is a 3-mana red enchantment. It says creatures without flying don't untap during their controller's untap phase. At the beginning of each player's upkeep, that player may pay 2 mana per creature to untap a creature without flying that they control. So this is a card.
Sex.
If, I mean, oh, it's a little, hey, you can pay 2. Just pay the 2. That's on you if you don't pay the 2. But I think this card is really good in decks that are built around flying creatures. So the first thing I thought of was in a deck like Dragons, right? If you're playing Dragons, all your creatures are going to have flying anyway. This is not going to hurt you at all. And then this is going to buy you a lot of time to get your expensive Mirams and Ur-Dragons and Lathlases on the battlefield. Because anytime your opponent taps their creatures, they're not going to untap unless they pay 2 mana. And people are not going to want to pay 2 mana to untap their creatures unless they have like some actual good use for them. So I feel like this card is just so good in decks built around flyers. So Dragons, you could also play it in like Kalia maybe, or like Hiker or something that makes flying tokens. But I'm curious of 2 things. One is this card even any good? 2 is this card acceptable, or is it like, is this too stacksy to just like, would you run this out at a Magic Con and expect people to be okay with it? Or do you think you'd get a lot of groans if you dropped a Mudslide?
If this is different... not acceptable, I think Commander players are way too soft, I feel like.
Oh,
my God. It's hilarious. I don't know if it's good. This seems like this seems very sus, but like, you know what? I would 100%. I would jam this in a dragon then 100% because it's funny.
Okay.
It's also funny.
And the artist will do this, Toma. Yeah. I am a little scared here because it is right now. It's $3 and I'm thinking about getting it because it is on the reserved list.
Oh, it's reserved. I didn't even realize it was reserved list.
Yeah. I don't know. Get it? It's like,
I mean,
I checked Tombstone Stairwell or something, which is, we had a similar episode where I just impulse bought this for like $10 and turns out this was a great idea. So I don't know. Get your Mudslide. It is stacks though. I don't know.
Here's how I think about this. This looks like basically a bad Ghostly Prison, because the true power of Ghostly Prison is not that it's just, it protects you from getting hit, but also it encourages your opponents to hit each other. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, oh, I have attack triggers. I have combat triggers. I got to hit somebody. I can't hit Seth because he's got a propaganda. So I'm going to hit somebody else. So it actually does the work for you. It actually lowers your opponent's life totals indirectly. Mudslide doesn't. Mudslide says, well, if I got to attack, I'm probably going to attack with like 1 thing. And it's going to be Seth because he's stacking me.
That is fair.
But at the same time, is it hilarious? Yes. What was the last? I have played since 2011. Okay. I played for 15 years Commander, and not once in my 15 years of playing Commander have I ever seen nor heard mention Mudslide in my life, and also all my researching of just Magic in general. I don't think I've ever seen this card in my entire life. That is momentous, my friends. That is something
it was
to treasure.
This is
a moment I will treasure in my soul, Seth.
I'm glad I could be of assistance, Domer.
You have shown me a card that has existed since I've always played Magic and I have never seen, and that is incredibly rare. So thank you. And it's kind of playable.
It's kind of playable, and the art is really funny because it's like some soldier guy, and the mud's like sliding, and
he's
just
eating
barely
that mud.
See you. Yeah, he's eating the mud, just trying to keep his head above the mud.
Amazing.
Yeah, Dragons, played in your dragon decks. Your playgroup will love it.
Wait.
That's why you listen to the podcast.
Is he just a giant, though? Because are the trees right beside his face?
It's got to be a giant.
Oh, that's it.
So
wow,
he's
got to
be really
giant.
Big?
That's
or
a,
they're very
like a
small
mudslide
trees.
Then, yeah. Huh. Yeah. Ice Age. You never know. You never know in Ice Age. All right, one more round. Back to the top of the order. Fail. What's one more card that people forget to put in their decks?
We're going to take one that I play in one of my decks because it always looks a little weird, but then whenever I play it, it feels right at home. It is Kogla the Titan Ape. And I...
Oh, yeah.
So It is a 6-mana, 7/6 Vita that a creature ape that when it enters, it fights up to one target creature you don't control, so it is interaction. Don't say I don't play interaction. Yeah. And when it attacks, destroy target artifact or enchantment and defending player controls. It's even more interaction. But the reason I play it, weirdly enough, is the Forgotten Third ability here. For 2 mana, 1 and a green, return target human you control to his owner's hand. It gains indestructible until end of turn. And it is in my Lonus deck, and it should be in another deck as well. And I often use this 2-mana ability just to bounce good ETB humans, which a lot of people don't know that Eternal Witness is actually a human, not an elf, you would think. it looks very elfy. Then like Aether Channeler is another one that's pretty good to bounce. Vensa, Agent of Treachery. It needs a lot of mana, but funnily enough, I play it in a deck that creates infinite mana, and then you have like a weird little infinite package for like steal infinite permanence or bounce infinite permanence or get cards back from your graveyard. It is like a card that you might just want to play because it is generally good. Like a 6-mana, 7/6 ETB destroy something, attack destroy something. That's very playable by itself. And then maybe your deck has the pieces to make this very oppressive and very good in the late game.
It reminds me of, oh man, I'm blanking on the card name. I'm pretty sure it starts with Teemer. It's a 4
Sabertooth,
drop. Sabertooth. Yes. Kind of reminds me of that to some extent, but you get like all this upside, assuming you're playing humans, where you get to like blow stuff up and you get a way bigger body and you get to blow, you know, fight stuff when it enters. So I feel like you can do a lot of the same kind of shenanigans, assuming it's humans that you want to bounce. So yeah, I think in a human deck, Kaggle's actually seems pretty good. Do you play this one, Domer?
Humans, like Druid of Purification as well. Like a lot of the generally cards that I play.
Do you think
humans.
So if you just put this in a generic green deck, you think you'd naturally have enough humans for it to be good? Or do you think you got to build around it to some extent? Like, do you have to try to make sure you have, like, some number of humans?
I play it, but I don't... Let me check my... I think the other deck it is in is Maelstrom Wanderer, which maybe in Lonus I try to build all the pieces, but Maelstrom Wanderer is just ramp. So I'll check and Toma can talk.
I think you just ignore the human part altogether. The card is just very strong. Like, it's just a good, like, if you're creature heavy and you can cast 6-drops pretty reliable green, which is like every green deck, it's removal that is hitting on both axes, disenchanting and killing creatures. It's just a very good top end, and it's a huge beater. And then on top of that, sometimes you can save your human creatures, and humans are by far the most common creature type. So I think just like a random green deck is going to have some creatures laying around. So I feel like this is just like a good, if your deck is like just needs like another good top end creature that can act as removal, this is just really good. It gets even better if you give it haste, but like if I just need another creature in my green deck, this is just, it's really solid. It's just a really solid thing to throw in.
I gotta admit, my Maelstrom Wanderer only has it for Druid of Purification, but I activate it multiple times just for this. So,
and maybe you don't need that many
because
like the body is already like so good and the other abilities are so good. And plus other cards, Eternal Witness, Timeless Witness, Druid of Purification, Outcaster Trailblazer is a card I kind of like that this would work pretty well with because you get the mana back when it enters. So it's kind of one if you're blinking it and you get the enters trigger. So there are like quite a few good mono green humans that this would work well with. Yeah, I like it. I like it. Tomer, how about you? What's your final pick?
Okay, so I was gonna finish with Price of Progress, which is kind of like a signature spell at this point, where if you run basics, if you're a deck that runs basics, let's say like 20 or more basics, not even that many basics, just 20, this is just like I kill my opponents and I live, and it's very funny. But then I looked at the percentage, and it's 1.23% of decks, which I'm like, okay, a little bit too high for my taste. So I'm going to give you I'm going to give you a little bit of a spicy tack, but bear with me, okay? You were with me on Drown Yard Temple, right? Everybody was like, oh, it's Homer. Great choice. Putting it in my decks, okay? All right, here we go. Same concept, but even spicier. 0.04% inclusion rate in decks. An absolute crime against humanity. Carry a net. One and a black. Two mana black. 1/1 summons skeleton. It has an activated ability of 2/2 black pips, 4 mana total. Remove Carrionette and target creature from the game. That creature's controller may pay 2 generic mana to counter this ability. Use this ability only if Carrionette is in your graveyard. So, if Carrionette's on the battlefield, it's a 2-mana 1/1 skeleton. Whatever. But, my friends, you discard this. You self-mill this. And then suddenly, for the cost of no mana, for the cost of no card, right? You just milled it. You discarded
it. Oh, man.
You're not down a card. You suddenly have instant speed removal ready to go in the graveyard. And you're going to tell your opponents, hey, by the way, I discarded Carrionette. Yes, it's an instant speed swords to plowshares from the graveyard. Yes, it's very strong. They're going to forget. Eventually. And you're going to remind them.
Okay, they're going to forget. I was going to say, because they can't pay.
You're going to remind them. And so eventually, they're going to have less than 2 mana. And then, bam, you get them at instant speed. And swords to plowshares for free from the graveyard. I rest my case.
For free? It's 4 mana.
It was card free. 4 mana, but it's instant speed from the graveyard.
You can activate it multiple times. Right, because remove it from the graveyard is behind the colon.
That is true. It gets better if you're Cabal Coffers believer, because I know both of you are. Both of you love the Cabal Coffers. Black is really good at making lots of mana. You can activate this multiple times, my friends. It is fun. It is a fun card.
Might make me try it. Like if you can coffers this and like turn it into a wrath, that's actually kind of sweet tech. I don't know if just like I don't play enough targeted removal to really be that hyped about like this weird old tricky way to essentially build a Doomblade. Like so that part's not that exciting, but the activating it multiple times is cool. I would play it in like skeletons probably, partly because skeletons can still use the help, all the help they can get, because there's just not that many good skeletons. But like a Tiny Bones deck, I think this would be good in, or something like that, some sort of self-discard deck. I remember you like using it on Clash, and I can't remember, did it work, Tomer, or did we all laugh about it not working? I remember us laughing, but I can't remember if we were laughing because you got us with it or because it failed miserably.
I honestly don't remember using it on Clash yet, but I have been putting it in decks, so we'll see.
We've seen it.
I have like this memory of someone Karen editing, but maybe I'm misremembering.
I gave it to Krim. I made him a surveil deck and I put it in, and he misunderstood that it has to be in the graveyard. So it's like, this card's trash. I'm like, no, it's not trash. You're in a surveil deck, you surveil it in the graveyard, and then it's a free spell in your graveyard. It's
free.
So it's card free. Because you didn't have to draw. You didn't have to use it from your hand. You're not down a card. Or you could play it and skull clamp it, and then you draw 2 cards, and now it's in your graveyard.
And then you exile it, blow something up, pull from Eternity, get back in the graveyard, do it again.
You put it in the graveyard.
It goes back in.
It's hot. I put it in Selenia now. You convinced me.
All right, let's move on to the last pick. And I was gonna name another stacks piece, but we're gonna go a different direction with this one. So these are cards that there's 2 cards. They're kind of similar, and these cards I've played quite a bit because I'm a big Panharmonicon believer, and I think these cards are great Panharmonicon cards. But I think people overlook and don't play these cards because they think that you're supposed to use them on their opponent's creatures, maybe. Crystal Shard and Erratic Portal, very similar cards. Erratic Portal, 4-mana artifact, pay 1, tap it, return target creature to its owner's hand unless its controller pays 1. Crystal Shard, 3 mana, pay 3/1 blue and tap it, same ability, return target creature to its owner's hand unless its controller pays 1. So if you read these cards and you haven't played a lot of Magic, you're not thinking about it a lot, your first impression is probably, That sounds awful. My opponent only has to pay one to fizzle this effect. That's not very good. My opponent's probably going to have one mana, and I don't get to bounce their thing. And that is true. These cards are not very good at bouncing your opponent's things. The value of these cards is if you're a deck that's built around enters triggers or cast triggers or Panharmonicon effects, once you get these on the battlefield, these are pay a mana to get back your own creature to hand. You can even do it in response to a removal spell or a wrath spell, but it's a way you can get your Muldrifter or your Maelstrom Wanderer or your Aurora Awaken or whatever big enters thing back to your hand to just give it another spin. And then you also get the upside that occasionally, almost like carrying that, people forget about the portal, they forget about the crystal shards, or they really want to tap out, and then you get them. And when you do bounce like a five drop with this, you feel so smart. You feel like you just got away with it when you actually bounce something a mana value. So Erratic Portal is like 0.14 on EDH Rec, Crystal Shards 0.59, so both like very not heavily played. But these cards for me are like staples in bounce, blink, Panharmonicon style decks. Curious what you guys think. Do you guys play these ones?
I'm so scared of Crystal Shard. I got blown up. You feel so dumb if you forget about it when it's on the board. And it happened on Clash because I think you used it against me.
It was probably me, yeah.
It is so brutal. And then it is very, very efficient at just bouncing your stuff. Especially like Crystal Shard. Like,
and there's also kind of this funny thread of it too that like if people do remember it, if they have to leave up one mana every turn, you're really like, that's a huge tax, right? Like, you actually kind of stacks them. So if you choose to try to play around it, you're costing yourself a mana and you're probably like losing anyway because you're not playing very efficiently. But what do you think, Domer? Are these cards good?
I feel so old when you bring these up because I remember when I started playing, these were so common.
Crystal Shard was like a staple, right?
Crystal Shard especially. It was played so much. It was just, that's how Blink decks, bounce decks, used to return their creatures to reuse the ETBs. Like, this is how we did it. So, like, I feel like a fossil looking at these cards. So, like, what do you mean people don't play this anymore? But I haven't played it in so long, and they are good. Every single time I see Crystal Shard being played, I don't play it. But when I see it being played against me, it's basically a stacks. You're stacking me. I can't tap out or else you're going to knock away my creature that's very costly that I don't want to recast. But you're just using it to always just reuse your own stuff. And it's really good. It doesn't look good. It doesn't look like a good card, but it always plays better than it looks. And it's thank you for the reminder. I'm going to have to jam it again.
You can also use it politically. If the opponent has like a Druid of Purification and you can say, hey,
I can bounce
you to bounce
I'll
this
bounce
if
it.
You promise not to destroy the Crystal Shard, though.
Yeah, it's political.
These cards haven't been directly powercrept, right? I was trying to think, like, there's not like a better version of this, and that's why people stopped playing them, right? They just like started going different directions and playing Ephemerates and or whatever.
Right?
That would be impressive.
I feel
right?
like I would know. I feel like I would know, but then I'm afraid of missing it somehow.
They wouldn't power creep these stacks pieces, Seth. Stop. Let me play the game. Let me do the thing, Seth.
This was I should have just went with Ritual of Subdual then. If this was stacks anyway, this was my non-stacks pick.
Stop stacking me. I want to spend all my mana without repercussions, Seth. Let me tap out in peace.
So Commander players are kind of soft, aren't they?
They are soft. Little baby.
They just want to do my thing.
Wow. Let me know in the comment section if Mudslide is a stacks piece and you cry about it.
maybe that's a podcast we should do. Our commander players too soft.
I want that.
We might have to do that. Yeah.
We need Krim in here,
too. We do need Krim for that one, yeah. Anyway, I think those are all the cards we got time for today. So those are some of our picks for cards you might be forgetting to put in your decks. Do you got a favorite card that no one else plays that you always put in a deck and it works really well? Let us know about that in the comments. And we'll be back next week to talk some more Commander. So until then, have an amazing week, everyone. And this is Akira signing off.